Thank you for joining me on this journey through the history of music. This evening's relaxing jaunt will be varied, taking you from the early flute music around campfires in the caves of the Slovenian mountains to the beginnings of musical theatre in ancient Grecian theatres, up to the summer of love in the 70s for the advent of modern-day rock and roll. So, take a deep breath, relax, and get comfortable. When we think of music now, regardless of genre, we think of rhythm and melody. Advances in technology has meant the possibilities for modern music are endless. But if we start much, much further back, we start to think and imagine the origins of sound and communication in its most simplistic form. When thinking of the origins of music and sound, we find ourselves so far back in time that fact and fiction seem to merge. There is much debate which spreads across cultures and a variety of academic endeavors. Charles Darwin believed the origin of music was a mating call, while Wagner believes that music and language developed alongside one another and that both were preceded by a hybrid speech music. Others believe that music was initially used to encourage early groups to work in cohesion or communicate with the divine or supernatural. The real answer to the debate on the early origins of music is a quandary that is unlikely to be solved. But as time passes and history becomes a little clearer, evidence emerges that gives us a better understanding of the development of music, if not its beginnings. So, let's take a step back in time, towards the middle to upper Paleolithic period, in a cave in northern Slovenia. We're just above the depths of the Idrica River, which flows through the Idria Hills, shrouded on its banks by the deep green of thousands of poplar trees. It's here that it's believed Neanderthals fashioned a small flute from the bones of a cave bear and is the earliest musical instrument to be found. It perhaps symbolizes the very beginnings of instrumental music as we know it today. These prehistoric flutes have been found in the Swabian Alps of Germany, near the Danube, and even, a little more recently, in Jaihu, in the central plain of ancient China, near the Yellow River. As time passes and more developed civilizations start to emerge, we begin to see musical instruments depicted in a broad variety of ways. If we head east to the northwestern regions of South Asia, to the basins of the Indus River, carrying its glacial waters from the Himalayas, we find the Bronze Age civilization of the same name, Indus. Amongst this thriving civilization, we see the emergence of harps, rattles, and other instruments. The rhythm and melodies these instruments made will forever remain a mystery, but we can imagine that music played its part in the ebb and flow of the bustling civilization. From the plains of the Indus region, in the shadow of the snow-capped Himalayas, we head back east, traveling through modern-day Iran and Turkey to ancient Greece and the beginnings of musical theatre. Music played a large part in ancient Greek life and its various entertainments and religious ceremonies. The word music is, in fact, derived from the Greek word musis, the daughter of Zeus, To really enjoy the moment, you must picture yourself sitting in the grand stone semicircles of the great Greek theatres, basking in the Mediterranean sunshine, watching the emergence of musical theatre in all its comedic and tragic glory. Accompanying musicians playing string and wind instruments like the lyre, a stringed tortoise shell at this point in time, with reed pipes and pan flutes. If we move forward just a few hundred years, we can find ourselves in the black sand desert of Turkmenistan, in the original capital of the Parthian people, Nisa. Surrounded by great domes, a precursor to the shining golden domes seen in Turkmenistan today. Its walls and buildings adorned with floral patterns and stuccos. It is in amongst its bronze statues and terracotta plaques that we see a plethora of musical instruments depicted, including panpipes, harps, lutes, and percussion instruments like tambourines, with its citizens playing and singing songs which tell stories of heroes and gods. Thousands of miles away to the east and several hundred years forward in time, we can visit the Imperial Court of Japan. Its grand ornate structure and sweeping green-tiled roofs, surrounded by cherry blossom trees and stilted over ornate tranquil ponds. It's a vast move away from the black desert sands of Nisa, and the music here is varied, consisting of folk poetry, native Shinto religious music, and imperial song and dance. Music here was beginning to fuse with music from a broad variety of countries, including India, China, and Korea. Japanese court music, also known as gagaku, is one of the oldest and most fascinating of the world's continuous musical traditions. Its harmonies have gone on to inspire a whole host of latter-day composers and is still performed today. Traveling west from the cherry blossom-laden palaces of Japan, there couldn't be a history of music without stopping by in Constantinople, or the Queen of Cities. The capital of the Byzantine Empire, arguably the most powerful empire of this period, straddling Europe and Asia, Constantinople, a hugely diverse city, housing people from a wide variety of cultures and religions. Its imposing walls and many towers are home to a mix of composers who developed both secular and religious music, and perhaps most notably, saw the emergence of the use of the canon in Eastern Orthodox hymns. Loosely overlapping in time, in Western Europe, we see the emergence of medieval music. It's a broad term that encompasses a variety of different types of music, including traditional chanting. We also see the beginnings of polyphonic music, where two or more lines of melody are sung alongside one another. But for now, let's visit northwestern Italy, in Santiago de Compostela in Galicia. Santiago de Compostela was a place of pilgrimage. The word Compostela is thought to translate to field of stars. In the Middle Ages, pilgrims, many of whom were musicians from a variety of backgrounds, found themselves basking in the mild climate of the northwestern tip of the Iberian Peninsula. The Book of St. James, an anthology of advice for pilgrims, includes examples of music contributed to by the pilgrims from this period, including a song that consists of three voices singing together, perhaps the first of its kind. Moving forward in time, just a little, we come towards the Renaissance. You might assume we'd be heading to the Cyprus-dotted, sun-bleached slopes of Italy, imagining the music accompanying the work of Michelangelo, painting his frescoes in the Sistine Chapel. But in fact, we start this part of our journey in northern France, at Cambrai Cathedral. Also known as the Wonder of the Low Countries, the cathedral is nestled within the city walls in all its Gothic grandeur. Sitting within the cool and calm confines of the chapel, we listen to the music of Guillaume de Fay, one of the earliest Renaissance composers from the Burgundian school. We listen to the haunting voices of his five-part cyclic mass, filling the vaulted corners of the nave. In a time not quite Renaissance and not quite Baroque, we travel south, traversing the alpine slopes of the French and Swiss Alps, taking a moment to admire the snow-strewn slopes of Mont Blanc. We follow partway along Italy's iconic Po River, with its fertile flats and floodplains, and see, in the distance, rising regally amongst the dusty bustle of Florence, the Grand Duomo. Described by Henry James as the image of some mighty hillside enameled with blooming flowers. It is in this city where talented composers like Jacopo Corsi, obsessed with the Greek tragedies, merge poetry and passionate melodic vocals to create the first opera. As we enter the Baroque period, we begin with the impassioned vocal arias of opera, but perhaps end the period with the complex, intricately orchestrated concertos of Bach and Vivaldi, and the very beginnings of classical music as we know it today. To witness some of this impressive musical development, we journey to Saxony, or more specifically, to Leipzig. We sit in the austere and neoclassical calmness of the Church of St. Nicholas, listening intently to its four-part choir. The vocals, merging poetry and Lutheran texts, are accompanied by the harmonious ensemble of strings and oboe, with special highlights coming from the lilting music of violas and lutes, Bach's St. John's Passion. As time moves further on, the names of our composers become more recognizable. We move to the classical period in music and the arrival of legends like Mozart, Beethoven, and Schubert. Slowly, the focus on vocals begins to shift, and the melodies of their classical compositions are more distinct and instrumental. To experience this period in all its richness, we visit the Burgtheater in Vienna and arrive for the premiere of Beethoven's First Symphony. Sitting in the comfort of the red velvet stalls, admiring its hierarchy of golden balconies, we are immersed in the intertwined, initial peacefulness of the strings and woodwind, following the piece through all its shifts in tempo and its crescendos. Time passes. Orchestras grow in size and breadth. The compositions themselves lengthen, and we reach the Romantic period, the music of Chopin, Verdi, and Wagner. Opera is not a thing of the past. It still has a strong presence here, but things are adapting. Virtuosos of the violin and piano begin to gain huge notoriety, like Paganini and Liszt. Liszt was charismatic, his stage presence so strong that his fans watched his performances with adoration. To get our own glimpse of the Romantic era in music, let's journey to the cool, cobbled, misty streets of London at the turn of the 20th century, where we discover Debussy. Having grown up on the outskirts of Paris, Debussy's skills as a pianist and composer enabled him to travel far and wide. We find ourselves within the warm grandeur of the Queen's Hall, sitting comfortably, looking down from the ornate balconies. We can see the orchestra sweeping across a huge, tiered semicircle in front and beneath us. They sit proudly in the shadow of the elaborate, towering golden organ which envelops most of the back wall. We listen to the soundscape of nocturnes, its slow tempo bringing a sense of calm to the audience, taking us on its magical journey, offering a quiet melodic revolution. Developing alongside these elaborate orchestral classical pieces, popular music is making its own way in the musical world. As the 20th century unfolds, technology is on its own developmental adventure. Sitting and drawing rooms around the world welcome the gramophone, latterly, and the radio. Musicians begin to use amplifiers and electrical instruments. Suddenly, musical culture is changed, slowly getting nearer to the diverse multiplex of genres that we embrace today. Vocals are finding their way back to popularity, and the structure of music begins to form a recognizable pattern with verse and chorus. It's a period where it becomes even more difficult to plot a straight course. To guide you, our listener, you may need to forgive us our meandering, our dipping in and out of genres and movements. We can give you a flavor of the developments, but the broad diversity of the music in which we find ourselves in this period means that stones will be left unturned and stories untold. So, we now leave the misty streets of London behind us. We bid farewell to Debussy and his pianistic genius and head west. We chart a path over the unpredictable, dark waters of the Atlantic Ocean. Following the well-used paths of the transatlantic steamers and the fateful journey of the Titanic, we find ourselves enveloped in the jovial hustle and bustle of the streets of New York, taking a well-earned seat on the high steps of Tin Pan Alley and its sepia-toned facade. We are voyeurs, watching the comings and goings of the best writers, singers, and musicians the United States has to offer, as they enter and leave the offices of the most well-known music publishers in the world. We hear the toe-tapping, conversational, and often comedic music of vaudeville theatres and dance halls. Taking a walk away from the Tin Pan Alley, we look up at the dark angles of the terraced buildings and their many external metal staircases. We see laundry gently blowing in the breeze on the railings and, as night falls, we notice the glow emanating from upstairs windows, wisps of radio music in the air. The national feeling of this time turning a little more somber. The depression is on its way, and the great wars that follow, but the evolution of music does not pause. From the heart of the music business in Tin Pan Alley, we travel almost the full length of Manhattan Island through the luxurious greenery of Central Park to Harlem. While perhaps uninvited, we pay a brief visit to Harlem's Savoy Ballroom, the lights over its grand entrance making our arrival. While we sit in a quiet corner, the ballroom is alive with dance and smiles. We listen to the music from Chick Webb, his orchestra, and hear the purity of Ella Fitzgerald's vocals. For the first time, we experience jazz and its creative genius, mesmerized by Ella Fitzgerald, her vocal improvisations giving the room a collective, heartbeat-like rhythm. So, where should our travels lead us next? It would feel comfortable to stay within the borders of the United States and its American dreaminess. We could witness the meteoric race to stardom of Bing Crosby and Frank Sinatra, entertaining the troops with their creamy crooning. We could travel over the pond and join the patriotic masses singing Vera Lynn's We'll Meet Again, and feel the national togetherness of those wartime years. But let's move forward a little further. Let's leave the wartime years behind us and head into the promise of the 1950s. It's 1956 to be precise, and we're in Lugano, a small Swiss town, sitting on the banks of the lake that bears its name. The Alps stand majestically in the background. We sit quietly in the small audience at Teatro Castle, a grand, ice-white theatre which sits in the centre of town. Unaware of the legacy that will follow, we're here for the very first Eurovision Song Contest, its goal to bring the broken European nations together. The common theme of the music is the ballad, as we see Liz Assier from Switzerland take to the stage. She's surrounded by flowers and accompanied by a small orchestra. The strings take pride of place, and her lyrics tell the story of youthful dreams and fairy tales. Her rolled R's giving her song, Refrain, its French-Swiss authenticity. The harmony from the accompanying choir and the elongated syllables make the piece feel very much of its time, with Lis and Switzerland crowned the competition's first ever winners. As more time passes, we move into the 1960s, where rock and roll begins to really make its mark on the music scene. It is not new. Rock and roll has been around in different forms since the 1920s, absorbing influences from the blues and R&B. But it's in the 60s in which rock and roll starts to stand front and center of the industry's metaphoric stage. We now have the Beatles, the Beach Boys, Aretha Franklin, and many more as fans line airport runways and festivals like Woodstock and Glastonbury are created. What better time to join the 60s than its summer of love, to experience its sense of community and wallow alongside the Bohemians embracing their freedom of expression and exploration. We find ourselves just south of San Francisco at Monterey Bay in California. It's just getting dark, the evening is upon us, and the warm June breeze blows from the bay. We're at the famous Monterey Pop Festival. There is a calming warmth across the audience. The anticipation palpable as Otis Redding takes to the stage. His smile and playfulness infectious. His soulful vocals and stilted beats building on this feeling of purpose and anticipation. His vocals about love and respect. His performance leaving a legacy that goes on to inspire musicians like Jimi Hendrix and many others for years to come. The memory of the summer of love begins to fade, but its subversive undertones persist. The Vietnam War and feelings of oppression from the marginalized feeds into the music of the 70s. Songs are peppered with protest. Songwriters of the time have their musical say, pushing for change. To witness this genius, we travel to Jamaica. its palm tree-lined shores paint a portrait of calm and chilled splendor. But times are tough, and Bob Marley and his reggae genius emerges to spread the word. We watch from the sidelines of the Jamaica Smile Festival. It's nighttime, and the stage is dark, cloaked in shadow, but the vocals emanate evocatively from the stage. The heavy reggae rhythm, bass guitar, and vocals of Get Up, Stand Up, making it one of the best-known songs of the generation. Inspiring action. Inspiring change. The 80s, however, are soon upon us. It is a period that, unlike the preceding two decades, is perhaps not recognized by music critics as pioneering, but it is not without its interesting twists and turns. Disco is starting to take a back seat, and we see stars emerge like Queen, George Michael, Elton John, and Whitney Houston. Electronic dance music is making its stand. For our homage to this period, we travel to Minneapolis, a city in the upper Midwest of America surrounded by grand lakes and waterfalls. We enter the cultural behemoth, the First Avenue nightclub in downtown Minneapolis. We are a privileged few chosen to hear a series of new tracks from Prince, including Purple Rain. Purple Rain is a song that is seen as a step away from Prince's determined persona of otherness to one of openness and vulnerability. We are lulled by its lengthy, soothing guitar solo. The quiet anticipation builds as time passes. Prince holds the stage. His charisma, use of vocal repetition, and the slow tempo make Purple Rain feel a little addictive, a song that stays with you. It's shrouded in this purple haze that we leave our musical tour. We have witnessed genius, the evolution of musical trends. We have seen how culture and music are often entwined, with one influencing the other. We have sat quietly in theatres, in nightclubs and ballrooms. We have cherry-picked, and for that, we must ask your forgiveness. But we very much hope you have enjoyed your jaunt through time and the history of music. We hope to see you again soon.